The Gospel of John, chapter 20. We ended about verse 3 or 4 in our study last Lord's Day morning. I want to begin our reading just at verse 1, the Gospel of John in chapter 20. The occasion of this, of course, is after the crucifixion of Christ, and now it has come to his resurrection. I had mentioned last Sunday morning, if you want to consider the other Gospel accounts, you can look at Matthew chapter 28, Mark 16, and Luke chapter 24. They add some things to the resurrection of Christ, but we've always just stayed with John's account, and that's what we'll do this morning. In John 20, beginning in verse 1, and reading from the New King James Version, "On the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. Then she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved, and said to them, 'They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him.' Peter therefore went out, and the other disciple, and were going to the tomb. So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter, and he came to the tomb first." As I mentioned just a moment ago, the other Gospel accounts add some things to this. Of course, Mary Magdalene on this occasion had gone to the tomb with some other women to anoint the body of Jesus. And they was wondering who was going to roll a massive stone away from the entrance of it. But when they arrived there, they looked up and noticed that the stone was already removed. And of course, the women came to tell Peter and the others that they believed that his body had been stolen, had been taken. Of course, at this time, Mary Magdalene had not even looked into the tomb yet. She just assumed, because the stone had been rolled away from the door, that his body had been stolen. So they come and they tell the disciples that. And of course, Peter, on this occasion, goes out to check out the empty tomb, or the report that Mary and the other women have told on this occasion. Peter, therefore, in verse 3 of John 20, went out, the other disciple, and were going to the tomb. The other disciple, mentioned in verse 2, was the disciple whom Jesus loved, whom we believe to be John, the Apostle John. And in verse 4, so they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first. Many people have looked at this, and they've actually decided that John was much younger than Peter because he outran him. Well, the text doesn't say that. Nowhere does it say that in the Scripture. We don't actually know the age of them. And just because one is able to outrun the other doesn't mean that he's younger. Sometimes an older person can outrun a younger person. John may have taken a shortcut that Peter didn't know. There's any number of reasons why John could have outrun him or made it to the tomb first and Peter did not. So we can't automatically assume, well, John was younger than Peter and he was able to outrun Peter. No, it simply tells us that John, if he is the disciple under consideration whom Jesus loved, he came to the tomb before Peter. But we're going to see later on in the text that even though he made it to the tomb before Peter, he waited on Peter before he ever entered the tomb. So just the fact that he made it to the tomb before Peter didn't matter much, since he waited on Peter to follow anyway. Verse 4, John 20, "So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first. And he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen cloths laying there. Yet he did not go in." Remember the linen cloth, the strips of cloth that were used to bind the body of Jesus together and hold the myrrh and the aloes that were placed around the body to keep the stench down. Remember, they would probably wrap a layer of linen cloth and then put the spices against that layer and wrap another layer. And so this is what John, stooping down and looking in, saw. Of course, he had to stoop down to look into the tombs. The entrances were not made large openings. The smaller the opening was, the better. It would be easier to seal. The larger the opening was, the harder it would be to seal. So they would make the entrance way, of course, small, and that's why he has to stoop down to look in. After they would open up an opening for a tomb, then they would hollow out the inside to where you could actually stand up in it. But to actually get into the tomb, you'd have to stoop down to go in. You just couldn't walk in it like walking in a door. So he stooped down and looked in, and he saw the linen cloths laying there, yet he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb, and he saw the linen cloths laying there. So John didn't go in, but he stooped down and he saw the linen cloths, but Peter did go in. And the linen cloths are just laying there. Verse 7, John 20. And the handkerchief that had been around his head, not laying with the linen cloths, but folded together in a place by itself. Folded together, we would say folded up. Some versions say rolled up by itself. But what do we see here? Remember the report that came to Peter and this disciple was that they have stolen or taken the body of Jesus. Back in verse 2, John 20, she ran and came to Simon Peter and another disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, they have taken away the Lord out of the tomb and we do not know where they have laid him. So the initial response is that they, of course, they who were antagonistic toward Jesus, the Romans and perhaps the Sanhedrin Council, they've done something with the body of Jesus. And we do not know where they've laid him, where they've placed him. We do not know where his body is at. And so Peter and the Apostle John go and check out the report that has been made. Now John 20 and verse 8. Then the other disciple who came to the tomb first went in also. So he gets there first, but he doesn't go in. Then Peter goes in, and now the other disciple goes in. And note what is said about this disciple that was not said about Peter. The end of verse 8. And he saw and believed. I want you to note that. He saw and believed. Now our big question is, what did he believe? Because the first thing that perhaps comes to our mind is he believed that Jesus had been resurrected from the dead. But that doesn't match up with the context as we're going to see in the verses to follow. He didn't believe that Jesus had been resurrected from the dead. What was the report that came to him? The report that came is his body has been taken. We don't know where it's at. It's not in the tomb. That's what he believed. He believed now what the women had said. That's what he believed. We understand that to be what's under consideration, especially in verse 9 and following. Note it begins with a little word for. Gives a reason for why he believed what he believed in regard to the report from the women. For as yet they did not know, that is, they did not understand the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. Now Jesus had said, we'll not take time to go back in the Gospel of Luke, but at least on 3 or 4 occasions in the Gospel of Luke, I keep saying Luke, in the Gospel of John, and Jesus had said that he must go to Jerusalem, die, and be raised again from the dead the third day. And so they didn't comprehend that. They didn't understand that. And when he mentions Scripture here, he could have reference to some Old Testament Scripture, but a specific Scripture about his resurrection from the dead, we can't find. We could perhaps go to Isaiah 53, which indicates that he would rise from the dead, but it doesn't specifically say that he would. And so what scripture is under consideration is completely unknown, except maybe what he has said that was later recorded in scripture. Remember, John is writing this all after the fact. And so he might be speaking of scripture that as on the day that in which he was resurrected, had not yet been written. And so that might be the scripture that is under consideration. For as yet they did not know, they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise again from the dead. So the belief in verse 8 is not the belief that he had arose from the dead, because they didn't understand it. They didn't comprehend him being raised from the dead. Now, before this, and we need to tie this in too, in our study of chapter 19 and him being put to death. Remember, it was obvious in chapter 19 that he died on the cross. And we tried to impress that upon your mind, especially in reference to them not breaking his legs, because he was already dead. So the soldiers understood that he was dead. That's why they didn't break his legs. But out of brutality, or in order to ensure that he was dead, remember, one of the soldiers thrust the spear in his side, and out ran blood and water. They believed he was dead, and in fact he was. As a matter of fact, those who looked on understood that he was dead. Not only the soldiers, but Pilate understood that he was dead. The leaders of those soldiers understood that he was dead. Everybody understood he was dead. Joseph of Arimathea and the one who came to Jesus by night, Nicodemus, believed that he was dead. They buried him. So all understood that he was dead. And so on this occasion, when the tomb is empty, the initial report is they've taken his body. The initial report wasn't from those closest to him that he has arose from the dead. Now the women, knowing the tomb was empty, they didn't come back and say, he's arose from the dead. And John goes out and sees the empty tomb, and that's what he believes, that he's arose from the dead. No, John believes the report that the women has now given, that his body has been taken. And we know that be the case because later on, when Jesus appears to his apostles, they think he's a ghost. They don't know who it is initially. And so they believe the report that his body has been taken. They didn't fully comprehend and understand that he must, and note that in verse 9, that he must rise again from the dead. There's that little word must, sometimes translated ought. It has reference to necessity. It was a necessity that he rise from the dead. Verse 10, John 20. Then the disciples went away again to their own homes plural. So the body has been taken. What are they going to do? Well, what do the disciples do? They just go to their own homes. They just leave. All right, John 20, and in verse 10. Then the disciples went away again to their own homes. So Peter and John leave, but Mary Magdalene now, having followed them back to the tomb, is here. John 20 and verse 11. But Mary stood outside by the tomb weeping. This is Mary Magdalene. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. So she's standing outside weeping, and the weeping here is loud and sobbing and lamenting. Why? Because still she believes the body has been taken. And that's what the disciples believe. She believes the body has been taken, and she's going to indicate that in the very next few verses. Verse 12. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. Then they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, note what she said, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Now, why didn't Peter or John say, "No, he's been resurrected from the dead"? They haven't taken his body. It's because they didn't know he had been resurrected from the dead. And they won't know that until they see him resurrected from the dead. What we're going to see in this account is Jesus is going to put a great deal of emphasis upon the witness of the resurrected Christ. Why? Because earlier, before his crucifixion, he had prepared them for their apostleship and their witness of him being resurrected from the grave. He had prepared them, but there's still preparation that needs to be made. They need to understand how important it is to believe a witness. And first off, they don't believe that his body has been taken from the grave. That's why they go to look for themselves. Well, I got to see it for myself. So they run to see for themselves. Well, yeah, I guess his body has been taken. And then they go to their homes. Mary is still under the assumption that his body has been taken. Verse 14, John 20. Now when she had said this, she turned around. Note, she's looking in the tomb. She's stupid looking in the tomb. She sees the two angels and they ask her, "Why are you weeping?" Verse 13 again. She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord and I do not know where they have laid him." Now as soon as she said that, there was some cause for her to turn from looking into the tomb. Perhaps she heard a sound behind her. Perhaps there was some motion out of the side of her eye that she saw. Or, for some reason, she turned and didn't keep looking at the angels. Verse 14, "Now when she had said this, she turned around and she saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus." Well, her eyes are filled with tears, and she's filled with grief and sorrow, and just the excitement of the occasion might have caused her to not know who Jesus was, or she could not have known who Jesus was because through some kind of miraculous act, she had not recognized him. When we look at the other accounts, as Jesus, on the same day of his resurrection, walked on the road to Emmaus with two of his disciples, they did not recognize him. And as the apostles themselves later would not recognize him as he stands on the seashore and there on the Sea of Galilee fishing. Evidently it was some means by which they were not able to see him, perceive and comprehend exactly who he was. But we're not told why she did not know that it was Jesus. But note whom she supposes that it is. Verse 15, Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Same question the angels had asked, but she did not get an opportunity for them to respond after she responded to them. "Whom are you seeking?" She's supposing him to be the gardener. Supposing him to be, who else would be in the garden this time of day except perhaps the gardener, the one who cared for and tended to the garden? So verse 14, "Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, 'Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?' She, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, 'Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away.'" You know, there was great concern about dead bodies during this time, particularly among the Jews, always sought to take care of their dead bodies and bury them and put them out of their sight as soon as they possibly could. So it was great concern, not only because they loved him, but it was just a fact of the matter that that's what they did. They had great care and concern and love for those who had died, and they wanted to take care of their bodies. And so Mary on this occasion sees Jesus, but she does not know who he is, and supposing him to be the gardener, poses this to him, "Tell me where you have laid him and I will take him away." Verse 16, John 20, Jesus said to her, and note what he says, just one word grabs her attention because she has heard that voice before. "As the shepherd calls the sheep by name, they respond. And Jesus said to her, 'Mary.'" She turned. Note, she turns again. So evidently, she had been looking into the tomb at the two angels. Something got her attention, and she turned and saw Jesus, whom she supposed to be the gardener, but evidently she turned back to the tomb after she had said what she had said to Jesus, but now she turns again because she hears that so familiar voice. She turned and said to him, Rabboni, Aramaic, which is to say teacher in the Greek. Jesus said to her, Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and to your Father and to my God and to your God. So Jesus said to her, Do not cling to me. Now, I believe, unless I forget, I believe the King James Version uses the word touch. Do not touch me. As a matter of fact, the word that is translated cling here in the New King James Version, touch in the King James Version, only used 40 times in the New Testament, 35 of those times it's translated touch. I want to suggest to you that perhaps that which the King James Version has rendered, it probably ought to stay that way. But there's nothing wrong with cling. The point that is being made here, we note, Jesus said to her, Do not cling to me. But note the very next word. For, as that little Greek conjunction, it gives a reason for that statement, Do not cling to me. Well, why? Why can't I touch you? For I have not yet ascended to my Father. Now, Jesus is not saying here, You can't hold on to me. You can't touch me because I've not yet ascended. We need to understand what has transpired. She recognizes now that the individual before her is Jesus. The day before, where was Jesus? In the tomb dead. And even 2 days before that, he was in the tomb dead. The reason she touches him, or as some versions render it, cling to him, is she wants to know if he's real or if he's a spirit. Because the first time the apostles see him, they believe he's a spirit. They believe he's a ghost. And in order to disprove what they believe, look at my hands, look at my side. He gives them some evidence that he's not a spirit. And so that's what's taking place on this occasion. As a matter of fact, when you read the other gospel accounts, Jesus also appeared at this time to other women on this occasion, and they bowed and held on to his feet, but he didn't tell them to let go of my feet. He also told Thomas, reach your hand here. He wanted them to touch him, to make sure that he was a flesh and blood body. The body that went in the tomb is the body that came out of the tomb. And what's Mary trying to do? Mary knows that he died on the cross. And she's trying to convince herself on this occasion, it is truly Jesus, the flesh and blood body that went in the tomb is the flesh and blood body that came out of the tomb. He is not spirit. He is real. All right, verse 17 again, John 20. Jesus said to her, Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. So when does he ascend? It's not that he was going to ascend right now. When he ascends, he will ascend not as a flesh and blood body, because Paul tells us that flesh and blood cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. When he ascends, he will ascend in a spiritual form, with a spiritual body, but it will not be a flesh and blood body. So you can touch me if you want to. You can cling on to me if you want to, but I've got a flesh and blood body. But when I ascend, I won't have a flesh and blood body, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. I'm not in spirit form. I'm flesh and blood. But go to my brethren. My brethren here is my brothers, not my earthly brothers, those pertaining to his earthly family, but those of his spiritual family. Now, this is important, especially in the context in regard to what was said to John and to Mary, his mother. Remember when he died on the cross. And I've made mention of the fact that it might have reference to the spiritual family and not to a physical family when we suppose that John the Apostle took care of Jesus' mother after his crucifixion. And so we come back to this idea of a spiritual family. But go tell my brethren, my brothers, and say to them, I am ascending to, note this, my Father and your Father and to my God and your God. So he speaks of the spiritual family here, refers to them as brothers. I am ascending, not ascending right now. He would not ascend until at the end of 40 days. But he will ascend. Not that he's ascending right now. He didn't go to heaven, turn around and come back. No. We read about his ascension in Acts chapter 1. So he makes mention of the fact that he's going to ascend, but not when he is going to ascend. Verse 18, John 20. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples. Now note this. So she's seen the resurrected Lord. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and that he had spoken these things to her. Did they believe her? Don't know. Don't know whether they believed her or not. You've seen the resurrected Lord? He was dead and in the tomb. He'd been dead and in the tomb for 3 days. And you've seen the resurrected Lord? They didn't really believe her account, as they didn't believe the account of the other women whom Jesus appeared to on this occasion.
I don't think that you want to believe
it. They didn't. They didn't know. They knew the body was missing, but they hadn't been able to put it all together. Verse 19. Then the same day at evening, the same day. What day is it? Sunday. The first day of the week. Go back to the beginning of the chapter. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. The first day of the week is Sunday. Seventh day of the week is Saturday. That was their Sabbath day. And the reason the women did not bring spices to anoint the body of Jesus on the Sabbath day because it was a holy day. It was their day of worship. But on the first day of the week, she comes to the tomb. He arose from the dead on the first day of the week. And now on the same day, on the first day of the week, a lot occurred on this first day of the week. Brother David mentioned in a class or two earlier that the importance of the first day of the week, Sunday. We see the disciples gathered together on the first day of the week. And then again, later on in our context, we're going to see them assembled again for a second time on the first day of the week. So there was some significance of that. Not only did he rise from the dead the first day of the week, but the disciples are assembled on the first day of the week. Two consecutive Sundays in a row. There must be something to that. So here in John 20 and verse 19, then the same day at evening. Now remember, we've studied this before. The Jews had two evenings. There was an evening that started about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and then went to 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And then was an evening that picked up at 6 o'clock, or we might say sundown, and then lasted for a period of time. This is the late evening that is under consideration. So then the same day at evening, note this, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled, for fear of the Jews. So, the disciples are assembled. When we read the other gospel accounts, it's more than just the apostles. The disciples are assembled. They're gathered together here on the first day of the week. Perhaps they've gathered together here on the first day of the week because they've gone to the tomb and the tomb is empty. They may be saying, well, what is this? What does all of this mean? They're gathered together on the first day of the week and the doors are shut because they feared the Jews. Members of the Sanhedrin Council, what are they going to do to us now? The body is missing from the tomb. Are they going to come after us? Are they going to be hostile toward us? What's going to happen to us? Perhaps a lot of things were going through their mind. Jesus came and stood in the midst and said to them, "Peace be with you." Peace. That word is still used by the Jews today. Go to the Old Testament, Shalom, peace, tranquility, happiness, blessings be with you or upon you. Now when he had said this, note what he did. And why did he do it? To prove that he was a flesh and blood body. Now when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. Then Jesus said to them again, "Peace to you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you." So now he speaks about sending them again. It is preparing them for their apostleship. And we're going to see in the later context the importance that he places upon the witness of him being raised from the dead. What we have not seen in this account, which we would see in the other accounts, is not only did Jesus on this first day of the week appear to Mary Magdalene, but he also appeared to other women who came to the tomb as well. There was Mary, the mother of James, and Joanna, and Salome. He also appeared to them. But he also appeared, as we learn in Luke's account, on this first day of the week, he had also appeared to the Apostle Peter. We learn that in Luke's account, as well as in Paul's account in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. But we have no occasion in the gospel accounts describing the fact that Jesus appeared to Peter on this first day. It's simply not mentioned in regard to what took place when Peter saw him on this occasion. But he also appeared to two other disciples on the first day of the week. And that was to those two individuals that walking on the road to Emmaus. So there was appearance on the first day of the week to several individuals. And on this occasion, he begins to speak of him preparing them for their apostleship again. Jesus said to them again, "Peace to you, as the Father has sent me." There's that word from which we get the word apostle. It's the verb form of the word apostolos. "I also send you." Now, two different words in the Greek, two different verbs, but they're synonymous. As the Father has sent me, I'm going to send you. Remember, the scriptures speak of Jesus as being an apostle, one sent with the authority to carry out the mission for which he has been sent on. Well, he's going to send the apostles on a mission and give them the authority to carry that mission out. We'll have to end there. Questions or comments? All right, we'll pick up here then at John 20 and verse 22 next Lord's Day morning.